Well, from the New York Times to PBS's Nova, David Pogue is one of media's best-known presenters of tech topics. Pogue is also recently known as technology columnist for Yahoo Tech. His acclaimed public TV series, Making Stuff, aired last year here on WKAR-TV. The Ohio native was on the Michigan State University campus this past weekend to receive the WKAR Media Award. Current State's Peter Wharf caught up with David Pogue on Saturday to talk tech and about Apple's new watch.
What the Apple Watch does for you is two things. It's a great health monitor. It's got the heart rate monitor. It tracks your steps and your standing.
Right.
Does not track your sleep like all the other fitness bands, like this one that I'm wearing right now.
Right.
This is one of the newer Up bands. So that's problem number one. Problem number two, so the two things it does, it tracks the health and it saves you from pulling your phone out all the time. It taps you. It doesn't buzz. It taps you on the wrist. And lets you know when there's something to look at, some text message, or if you're driving, it's the next turn for GPS or whatever. And that's useful. That's nice. But
you talk about how it's a useful accessory to the phone.
Right. It requires an iPhone.
Right.
Yeah.
And it gives you a heads up, as you say, to certain sort of like primary functions that you might want to know about and not have to pull it out of your pocket.
That's right. Just as your phone is a screen for all the noise of your life, all the messages and so on, the watch is a screen for the phone. Right. But the killer is the battery life. I mean, every night you take the watch off, you plug it, connect it to its magnetic white charging cord. And so one night I was, I've got a MacBook Air, I've got an iPhone. Already there's two white charging cords on my bedside table, and this is a third one. I'm like, what am I doing?
Right.
This is a ridiculous nightly and morningly procedure, and it's not worth the payoff for the two things that it gives me. There are much better fitness and heart monitors that are smaller and cheaper and last for a week on a charge, and this thing can't track my sleep, and since it's charging every night, it's not even a watch at night. So that means when I have to get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, I can't see what time it is. And it has, a wonderful silent alarm feature. It taps you on the wrist to wake you, but you're not wearing it.
Right.
So I'm heartbroken because they did. I mean, obviously, it's very important to Apple. They put light years more effort and design care into it than anybody's ever done before. But the battery tech isn't there yet.
Right. Seemed like a mixed review to me from what I saw in your video and what you're saying now.
Yeah. I mean, it does really cool things, but it's the tipping point between what you pay and what you sacrifice and what it gives you is just to the left of tipping. It's not quite there yet.
It's a pretty new product. Do you think it will succeed or fail?
I think it will succeed. They've had a couple million people buy it already. And then there will be a 2.0, a year from now, which, by the way, makes me feel really bad for the people who spent $17,000 for the solid gold edition. Like, do they know in a year there's going to be a new one?
Right.
And you can't trade it in. You can't replace the guts.
That it's just slightly not updated jewelry.
That's right. That's right. It's technology and it's going to be obsolete soon.
I was watching your TED talk that I found very interesting about why products fail. And I expected that you would say that this would be a success. I mean, it's an Apple product after all. Can we touch on a few of those ideas on why products succeed and then why products fail? And you gave kind of seven basic reasons. The thing that came up top was that it's really mostly not about the product.
There's a bunch of reasons things fail. In fact, I'm constantly amazed that things make it to the market. I used to be a Broadway conductor, and I used to conduct and play piano for Broadway shows. And I worked exclusively on flops. I mean, none of my shows ever ran. And that's true for most movies are bad, most plays are bad, most books are bad, the good ones rise to the top. But what amazed me is that here we were, these 80 members of the cast and crew and orchestra, and we'd show up every day, and every one of us knew we were working on a turkey.
Yeah.
But nobody dares say anything. You don't say, director, this show is going to bomb. And it's funny. It's the same thing when you're making a product. The train keeps chugging along because it's your job, because you're getting a paycheck for it. You'd be stupid to announce that you know it's going to fail. So nobody ever pulls the stop button on these things. They just keep coming to market, even though everybody involved silently knows that it's a bomb.
That's the Broadway flop effect, right?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly right. Right.
Talk about the fix-it-later syndrome.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that when, especially in software and web products, that they come out with a 1.0 version knowing that it's filled with bugs and problems, right. And the attitude is, well, we'll fix this later. They use us, in essence, as their beta testers, the paying customers. 2 years ago, I taught a class at Columbia Business School for a semester, and here are all these young future tech executives, and I'm the reviewer. So I was telling them the benefits. I was sharing with them the benefits of my knowing this industry so well, and I'm saying, for God's sake, don't do that. When you come out with a product, don't rush it to market. Wait till it's ready because you only have one chance to make a first impression. And to my astonishment, these kids would raise their hands and say, oh, Professor Pogue, that's really not the way the industry works. I said, what? And they're like, yeah, we all interned at software companies. And the philosophy is get something out. You right. can iterate later. You can fix it later.
Right. So going hand in hand with that fix it later syndrome is the pressure to ship. That's kind of cart before the horse.
That's right, especially if it's a publicly traded company, especially if it's the Christmas season is coming up, the big tech buying season, you got to get something out there. And often that leads to just absolutely disastrous products that are nowhere near ready.
Right. This is Peter Worf for Current State on WKAR. I'm speaking with David Pogue. He is here at Michigan State University to receive the Communication Arts and Sciences WKAR Media Award. You know David for his work at CBS Sunday Morning. He is now the personal technology columnist for Yahoo Tech. He's also written for Scientific American, one of the oldest continuously published magazines in the world. 13 years of state of the art for the New York Times. 7 books in the highly popular For Dummies series, his Missing Manual series, and we know him for his work that has been seen on WKAR with Nova's Science Now on PBS in the Making Stuff series.
Here in Grand Bahama, it's just another day at the office, and this is serious business.
Do you have a history of bleeding?
I do have a history of bleeding. Every time I get cut, without fail.
I'm the only one on this crew who's not getting a suit of chainmail.
We are here on a quest to unlock the secrets of shark skin. That's right. Sharks are covered with tiny scales that somehow repel microbes. They're the inspiration for a technology that could be coming soon to a hospital near you.
What was it like to wear a suit on a jet ski?
You know, the Making Stuff series was really an anomaly. I mean, Nova is A, not known for its comedy,
right?
And B, not known for having a host on camera. It's usually just a narrator, unseen. But this was a particularly weird project. It was a National Science Foundation grant to make a miniseries about materials science, which everybody knew was not televisable. So hiring me to be the on-camera guinea pig and stuntman was sort of a last-ditch effort to figure out a way that they were going to film this show.
Right.
It turned out to be very successful. They got great ratings, and I got a lot of great experiences. I thought maybe the most interesting choice was I'm not a scientist. I mean, I wasn't a science major. The only B I ever got in high school was in chemistry. So it was interesting that they chose me, but As the producer put it to me, in the past when they've hired a scientist host to interview the scientist subjects, they're yeah. both using jargon, they're both way over the heads of the audience.
Right.
So maybe that was part of the formula, I don't know, but it's been a blast.
To me it was kind of like Colbert meets National Geographic. I loved it, combining humor with real science. Like how shark skin repels bacteria. That was fascinating.
Yeah, that may be my favorite story of all. Yeah. This marine biologist from Florida realized that nothing sticks to a shark's skin, not algae or barnacles, not even bacteria. And he realized that if he could reproduce that in plastic sheeting, he could revolutionize industries like the shipping industry. Ships build up all this gunk on their hulls, and it costs them in fuel and time and weight. And hospitals, healthcare, trillion-dollar industry with this huge problem of secondary infections. You go to the hospital with one problem, you come out with another one because of the bacteria that breed there. But what we've been doing so far is trying to kill the bacteria in hospitals with chemicals, which, as you know from the Purell bottle, kills only 99.9% of them.
Yeah. That 1% is going to kill you.
Yeah, that turns into MRSA,
right.
This new disease that kills people. Yeah. Anyway, so now what you do is you take his plastic sheeting based on shark skin and you put it on the door handles and the handrails and the light switches, or anywhere people touch, and the bacteria just go away instead of dying. It's absolutely brilliant.
The four words that come up are stronger, smaller, cleaner, smarter when it comes to these new materials and making stuff on the series that we find out about. There really are nano robots too.
Yeah.
I learned about that when you talked about smaller. What
right.
was that all about?
Nano robots. One guy has realized that bee venom is a terrific anti-cancer drug.
Right.
If you could only get the molecules of bee venom to rub up against your cancer cells and not kill your regular cells. So he's working on nanoscale delivery balloons that bring bee venom up against your cancer cells and then pop and then kill the cancer cells on the spot. It's crazy.
David Pogue is personal technology columnist for Yahoo Tech. You also know him for his work on CBS Sunday Morning, The New York Times, The Four Dummies series, and Nova's Science Now on PBS. The programs which you've seen on WKAR as well. Thanks again, David.
My pleasure.
For Current State, this is Peter Whorf.